Hey, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the NFL Roadshow. Preseason fully underway, which means that we are that much closer to opening day. Full transparency, I probably watched 5 downs of football over the weekend. My dad passed away a few weeks ago, and we had his memorial service over the weekend. Family was in town, and that just went out. I did not watch football. Although I was paying attention to the Eagles-Steelers game on Thursday enough to pick up Quez Watkins in my Deep Dynasty League. That speed on a team that is not dripping with great wideout options, sure, I'll go ahead and take a chance on that. Might have been an overreaction. Anyway, preseason's fun, helps us with some fantasy football scouting. For hardcore fans of teams, it's certainly good to get a feel for depth-related issues. But for broader conversations, I'm not sure how much it helps us really know about a team's chances to be good. And that is what I'm most looking forward to in week one, getting a real feel for who these teams are. Because there are a handful of teams that I'm pretty sure are going to be good. Like real good. And the football fan in me is looking forward to seeing them on the field and appreciating what they can do and watching them score at will and make plays on defense and all that stuff. I'm talking about the Chiefs and the Bucks and the Bills and teams that fall into that category. And then at the opposite end of the spectrum, the fantasy aficionado in me is looking forward to watching those teams that I'm pretty sure are going to be bad, because part of the reason we think they're going to be bad is because of a general lack of weapons. So like the Lions, who are they going to throw the ball to? You know, they don't have players that are obvious guys to draft in fantasy, but there will be guys who emerge as viable fantasy options for volume purposes. So who are those people? I'm very interested to watch those teams and find out. But the thing I'm most excited about are the teams that, for me, kind of feel like they could go either way. Teams that are generally falling into the middle of the pack that I think have the potential to be better than that, but have outstanding question marks that make me a little bit uncomfortable about going all the way and predicting them to be very good or good, period. And those are the teams that we're going to talk about here for the next few weeks. We're going to take 2 per week and try to figure them out with people who know them well. So here are the teams I'm looking at. The Patriots, the Panthers, the Broncos, the Cardinals, the Vikings, and the Ravens. And I know a lot of you are like, why are the Ravens on this list? And that is certainly fair, because it's not so much that I think the Ravens have the potential to be bad. It's that I think they have the potential to be not as good as we've come to expect them to be. Vegas has them at 11 wins this year, tied with the Bills for 3rd highest win total in the league. And they're on my list, this list, because I think I'm leaning under. Because the ways in which they took a step back last year from the very impressive team that we saw in 2019, I'm not sure they fixed those things in the offseason. I'm not sure they have the pieces in place there to have a strong passing game. And if they don't have a stronger passing game, then how far can they really go? Because good defenses can stop teams that are one-dimensional, like the Bills did to Baltimore in the postseason. So again, for me, that team is less, are they going to be good or are they going to be eh? And more, are they going to be good or are they going to be great? Because according to Vegas, they're in the latter category. And frankly, I don't think I see it yet. I could see them finishing 1st in the AFC North. I could see them finishing 3rd in the AFC North. So we'll see if Jameson Hensley can bring them more into focus for me. He's in his 22nd year covering the Ravens, works for ESPN. He's one of my guests today. The first one, though, is Courtney Cronin, who also works for ESPN and covers the Vikings, who might be the best example of a middle-of-the-pack team so far as Vegas views them. They've got them at 9 wins this year. That's top 17, like middle of the pack. They were 7-9 last year, could be in that range again, but I feel like they have the potential to be a lot better than that. They're one of those teams that I think could sneak up on people this year, because the offense is good. You can say what you want about Kirk Cousins, and yes, maybe he would be a liability in a matchup against the best defenses in the league, but their offense was not their problem last year. It was their defense that was surprisingly awful, like catch you off guard bad, particularly against the run. They were one of the worst defenses in the league in that department, 27th in yards allowed per game on the ground, 134. Remember that 6-touchdown game for Kamara on Christmas? That was the Vikings that it came against. And remember the secondary? For people who played daily fantasy, they were one to target. Like, go get a wide receiver who's playing the Vikings because they're going to have a big game. Great value pick. But I'm not sure that's going to be the case this year because of the players they're getting back from injury and because of the moves they made in the offseason. I think they have the potential to be good. But I'm curious what Courtney thinks. She's around the team all the time, would certainly have a better idea. She's covered the team for 5 years for ESPN. When we're done, you can find her on Twitter at Courtney R. Cronin. In the meantime, you can find her here. Let's break the huddle.
Hello, let's go!
2-1, 2-1, 2. Ready? Three.
Well, Courtney, thank you so much for doing this and helping me hopefully come to a better understanding of what to expect from the Vikings this year. Do you feel like you know what to expect from them?
Yes and no. Going into this season, really before training camp, I think that everybody thought they had an idea of what this team should be and what its potential is, given all the resources they dumped into the defensive side of the ball during the offseason. And then when you go look at the draft, they spend their top, you know, two of their top three picks on the offensive line. Makes you think that everything should be trending towards it going in the right direction of being fixed. And, you know, a lot of those things have not panned out thus far. I mean, I'll use the offensive line for an example. They go draft Christian Darrisaw. He's supposed to be your day one starter at left tackle. They draft Wyatt Davis, who was considered, you know, one of the best steals in the third round to be your day one right guard. Well, neither of those two things have panned out just yet. And it kind of feels like they're back in the same spot of this offensive line purgatory, which they've been in the last couple years. You know, defensively, things should be a lot better than what they were last year. But the first preseason game, for example, shows you they are really lacking in the depth department when it comes to everybody who is not your 11 starters on the defensive side of the ball. So I think that there's still a lot of optimism about what this team could be. And I haven't even broached the subject of, you know, the quarterback not being vaccinated and the liability that that brings up. But I think there's a reason that the taking the over on the 9 wins, which is in kind of the basis here for the Vikings going into the 2021 season, why that's such a liability for odds makers in Vegas right now, because you just don't know which way this thing is going to tip. Is it going to go in the right direction where they bounce back, they make the postseason, everything goes according to plan, or is there going to be something that, you know, becomes the ultimate snafu that drives this team down the wrong road this season? So it feels like things are starting to get, the wheels are back on the track a little bit, because the beginning of training camp was kind of crazy here, just with everything, kind of the ancillary off the field stuff that was going on. But then again, this team loves to keep it interesting, and they have certainly not had a shortage of storylines thus far.
Is there an easy answer as to why the defense was so bad last year? Because I feel like that caught people off guard. And obviously there were some big injuries at the beginning of the year that could be part of the reason why. But I think even then people were a little bit surprised that a Mike Zimmer defense was as bad, including Mike Zimmer.
Yeah. And I think that you knew this was going to happen at some point where they were trying to like kind of force this rebuild through, but like disguising it as a reboot. Like, it was very much a rebuild considering all of the pieces they had to let go of because of cap constraints from the 2019 season, like your Xavier Rhodes, Trey Waynes, Everson Griffin, Linval Joseph, you know, these guys who had been a big part of Mike Zimmer's defense for quite some time. You know, they all were not a part of the unit last year because they were on different teams. So you had a lot of young players who were relied on, especially in the secondary from day one. You're starting two rookie corners who were thrown right into the fire. And then obviously you lose your best defensive lineman before the season starts. And Danielle Hunter and Michael Pierce, your big free agent acquisition, opts out. So they were behind the eight ball, like way behind the eight ball before they even had a chance to get things going in 2020. And I remember, you know, midway through the season, Mike Zimmer was talking about the fact that with these young defensive players, he was taking them from kindergarten to a master's program in, you know, a matter of months. It was tough because it's a tough scheme to play in, especially on the back half of this defense. And you're relying on Zoom meetings and not being able to meld these players during a normal offseason program. and then just having them kind of hit the ground running from day one when they got here for training camp last year. And that's just not an ideal situation when you have as much turnover as they had. And obviously, you know, the injuries were, they were, you know, there's a long list of them. You lose Anthony Barr week two, Eric Kendricks goes out at the end of the season. It was kind of this comedy of errors, like just one, what's next? Like, that's kind of how it felt last year. Like, what else can this team deal with that it hasn't already faced?
You mentioned the scheme defensively. Will it be the same scheme this year? I know that he has historically been a 4-3 guy, Zimmer, but I have also read some talk about maybe incorporating some 3-4. Will there be changes to the way that this defense looks?
Yeah, we'll see. I always say that every year, kind of like, we'll see what actually happens, because they sure, always coach. Talk about, yeah, tinkering with, is he going to give up play calling this year? Might they start to put some 3-4 looks in there? You know, what changes on the back half of the defense? I think the couple things we can take away from training camp so far is the way that this defensive line looks now. Like, it's really, it has a potential to be really, really good. You know, they go get Dalvin Tomlinson in free agency. They know Michael Pierce is coming back. Well, in theory, that should solve the issue of what happened on Christmas Day when Alvin Kamara just ran amok and scored 6 touchdowns and they were embarrassed. So they want to stop the run. Very obvious. Well, they did that with what they were able to acquire in free agency. And then, you know, they get Sheldon Richardson. So you have like a starting caliber 3 technique who's, you know, going to be playing in some of your sub packages. So I think there's a lot of different things that you can do, you know, with just the way that you pressure the quarterback. They had 23 sacks last year. Yannick Ngakoue, you know, everybody's favorite stat is, you know, the sack leader from 2020 was off the roster by week 7 because he was traded. That was tough. So, you know, what we're starting to see is, you know, how they use defensive linemen. Are they going to be dropping guys into coverage from the end positions more frequently, maybe playing somebody's kind of this hybrid outside linebacker role? Those things have all been apparent to me during training camp. And then I think when you look at like someone like Patrick Peterson, he's 31 years old. He's a perennial Pro Bowler, a 3-time All Pro, but you cannot realistically expect that he's going to be able to go toe to toe in man coverage against elite receivers. Like, I'm sorry, he may have not ever had any serious injuries, whatever. Athleticism declines with age. It just does. So I think roles and responsibilities for him specifically on the back half of this defense, maybe they put him in more zone situations where he can rely more on the mental aspect instead of the true like physical traits that you can, that requires you to cover a Davante Adams for all intents and purposes, something like that. So I think that there will be tweaks to it. You know, Zimmer said he and his coaches this offseason went through other teams and watched what other defenses were doing to combat, you know, all of these changes that we see every single year in the passing game, like all these concepts that are brought in from college when offenses are trying to modernize, that makes it difficult on defenses. So they definitely went through the boot camp process of trying to get new ideas, be creative with it, and implement some of those things into what we'll see in 2021.
One of the things that I read recently that struck me a little bit was there was a comment that Anthony Barr made about the coaches being open to hearing players out. Mm-hmm. I feel like there's subtext there, right? Like, comments are not made in those types of situations when somebody's been in the same environment for a long time, that where that's a notable thing. Mm-hmm. Based on what you know, what kind of input might the players have had? Like, what kinds of things do you think that they would have said that they would like the coaches to consider moving forward that maybe they did in the past?
I think the one thing, we saw this in the spring, they came out wearing these like weird puffy, like shell of helmets. It kind of looked like my grandfather's leather helmet from like the 30s that he wore, but it was like, it's like white. It's got these like pillow looking pads on the side. And that was the players, like Zim has talked about this. The players have talked about it. That was their way of kind of pulling back in, you know, not going full go in OTAs and mini camp and him trying to do right by his players, which, you know, it's not the same, the core that he came in with in 2014 and what he's added to, they've all gotten older too. So, you know, trying to take care of them and their bodies and giving more vet days during training camp. And I know that they got criticized for sitting 31 players during the preseason opener and they got embarrassed 33-6 loss to Denver. But Mike Zimmer said, hey, they had a good couple of days of practice. It was kind of his way of rewarding players. So I think that, you know, when it comes to Anthony making that comment, you know, a lot of it can be traced to like what Zimmer has done to, you know, by way of helping his players. And so far we've seen that, you know, with Barr specifically, like Zimmer has said, he's given him some vet days. He hasn't been relied on, you know, to be there every single practice, which, you know, might be cause for concern for some people being like, is there something more to him coming off this pec injury? Did something else happen? But if you're just reading through it on like the surface level, it's okay. He's trying to, you know, protect the health and safety of, you know, his guys that he's going to be relying on and needing them to be in top shape September 12th, 13th, whatever the first game is, rather than like having them peak in the middle of August.
Is that a new thing for Zimmer, being open to that kind of feedback? I remember hearing that about like Tom Coughlin, right? That Tom Coughlin was kind of like a hard ass for a lot of years. And that became a point of contention to a degree with certain players on his team. And then, you know, when they went on those Super Bowl runs, that was like a kinder, warmer, fuzzier Tom Coughlin in the building, and it worked.
I think with Zim, like that, you can probably draw some parallels to that, where he has been a no-nonsense coach. You know, he's, you know, been here for seven seasons, and they've been good in some seasons, they haven't been in some, and you know, others. And I think for him, adapting is something that's been a big focal point of this part of his career as a head coach, realizing, you know, he got a 3-year extension last year. He's just entering the first year of that contract extension, but there's a lot at stake here. You know, if they don't win this year, they've never had back-to-back seasons under Zimmer where they haven't made the postseason. You know, Kirk Cousins has been up, he's been down, he's been kind of, you know, you get what you get with him. And I do feel like the pressure is on for someone like Mike Zimmer to win this year. And you need the buy-in of everybody else. And it's not just a matter of doing what you've always done, because what you've always done didn't work last year. Yes, there were a lot of mitigating circumstances that put you in a bind, but adjusting to that, adapting to that, because your locker room's only getting younger. You know, you're getting older, locker rooms gets younger. It's not like it stays the same. And I think having, you know, being able to reach players that, you know, you have a far bigger age difference between, and that's tough. Like that's, you know, for any coach who's, you know, of Zimmer's pedigree, of his age, I mean, he's one of the oldest head coaches in the NFL. It's not Sean McVay or, you know, Cliff Kingsbury, guys who are in their 30s doing this. So that's something I think what we've seen from Zim at this point of his career is a different version of him than when he first got here 2014, 2015.
You mentioned Kirk Cousins. Obviously, that's a big question mark that everybody talks about, is like, you know, they'll go how Kirk Cousins goes, to a degree that he could potentially limit the ceiling. He could dictate where those, the ceiling and the floor are. What does he need to be his best self, having witnessed him for several years now? Like when Kirk Cousins is the good version of Kirk Cousins, what is it that's happening?
Well, I mean, the whole narrative that surrounded him his entire career is that everything needs to be perfect around him in order for him to succeed. I don't know if I fully believe that, considering where this offense went last year on its own. I mean, you look at him like 11th in points, 4th in yards, like those are pretty good figures. I think that you probably need to be higher in scoring to, you know, to be one of these playoff teams that's going to go deep in January and February. But, you know, the defense fell apart last year, and that didn't help matters, because this is not an offense that can carry the defense. That's why they poured so many resources into shoring up that side of the ball, because Zimmer's a defensive head coach. He wants his defense to win games. He wants his offense to go out there, play conservatively, and not do anything that puts them in danger. And obviously special teams were a big issue here last year. So if you fix those two things, that should help Kirk and the offense quite a bit. But, you know, what, doing the whole reading between the lines thing, you know, why did they spend two of their top three picks on the offensive line and getting guys that are not just these big, you know, these zone scheme fits who are, you know, great athletes who can get to the second level and get to linebackers? No, they needed pass protection. Their interior pass protection has not been good the last few years. And Kirk is somebody who stands back there. He'll pat the ball. He waits too long a lot of times, and that's why he gets sacked. And, you know, to his credit, he has remained healthy. It's not like a lot of the hits that he's taken have put him out, but, you know, they're trying to shore up everything else around him, because this offense has a lot of skill guys. Yes. Dalvin Cook, like they've, you know, that offense is truly predicated on play action and what they do with the run. There's Dalvin Cook. They've got Adam Thielen, Justin Jefferson coming off his incredible rookie season. Irv Smith Jr. should be making huge strides this year, just in terms of the role that he's going to play and what he becomes kind of as that, the third receiver effectively. There's a lot around Kirk Cousins. It's just making sure can they have some stasis effectively, where it's not, a bunch of changes. And I know this is a league that changes day to day. You're dealing with injuries and you're dealing with other circumstances where things might not be great all the time, but if they can be great the majority of the time, that's going to help someone like Cousins thrive.
Tell me more about Irv Smith and his role in this offense, because in the fantasy football community, he has been the guy this offseason that is getting so much hype at the tight end position. Every fantasy football expert, I feel like, or a majority of them, are telling people like, wait on the tight end. You can get a guy like Irv Smith where he's going, and that's a great option for you. But then Zimmer said something a few weeks ago that kind of concerned me. He said that he doesn't actually see a bigger role for Smith this year. He sees a bigger role for Tyler Conklin. So that has me thoroughly confused about what he's going to do at the tight end position. Can you clear that up?
Yeah, I'll explain that. That was a question I asked Mike back in June about Kyle Rudolph's gone now. You have Irv Smith Jr., you have Tyler Conklin. What do you anticipate for Irv Smith as far as his role expanding? Irv was a starting caliber tight end even last year. I know he was up and down, and in the first 4 weeks of the season were a mess, and he got injured and all of that. What I take from Zimmer in that respect is that Tyler Conklin's going to have a lot of the blocking duties, because they use a lot of two tight end sets here, but that's going to free up Irv Smith to go across the middle of the field and be that big body target who can create a mismatch and, get them, chunk plays, 5, 7, 8 yards, or even a first down for Kirk Cousins. Irv Smith is going to have a big role in this offense. Like, don't like any of those comments. I think it was more so Mike being like, look, like, we've known Irv Smith is tight end number one here, and all signs pointed to that when they drafted him in the second round in 2019, that Kyle Rudolph's days in Minnesota were probably numbered because they wanted a different type of tight end in this offense. Like, the F tight end is, like, or at least it was kind of the trendy thing in the NFL when we saw how Philadelphia used Zach Ertz and Trey Burton in 2017 to win that Super Bowl. So then a couple of years after that, you're starting to see these guys pop up all over the place. Am I saying he's Travis Kelce? Probably not yet, but Irv will have a lot of opportunities in this offense. We've seen it out at training camp just about every day, especially in those red zone periods where he's taking on that Kyle Rudolph role. When Kyle was at his best here, whether it was for, Teddy Bridgewater, Case Keenum, or Kirk Cousins, the red zone is where he's made his biggest impact. And Adam Thielen had that role last year for sure, but Irv Smith is going to probably be taking on a bulk of those responsibilities inside the 20 and near the goal line.
What is Adam Thielen's role this year? Because it feels like Justin Jefferson's the breakout wide receiver, right? He becomes like the solid number one that a lot of people around the league are expecting to potentially rise to the top and be like the league's best receiver in that conversation by the end of the year. Is that the way that you're seeing it play out, where you've got kind of a new number one and Adam Thielen? I mean, he'll get volume because obviously the target share of those two wide receivers it's very concentrated there, but I'm wondering what all of this means for Adam.
Well, I think we're going to look at this and wonder, okay, how differently are teams going to play Justin Jefferson this year? I remember they played Green Bay week 8 last year, and Justin barely played the first 2 weeks of the season. So that was the second time the Vikings had faced their NFC North rival. But that was really the first time that Matt LaFleur and all the other coaches who were game planning for the Vikings got a look at Justin Jefferson. And yes, Dalvin Cook went nuts that game. It was windy as hell. Like, Adam Thielen and Justin Jefferson were not the storyline that game. But that week, Matt LaFleur is calling Justin Jefferson a number one receiver, and the guy's not even halfway into his rookie season. Like, that says something to me. Pete Carroll was saying it in week 5. People took notice of what Justin Jefferson was doing last year. And even then, they still weren't able to truly limit him. I mean, he got his. He had some unbelievable games. Tennessee game, his first start. 7 catches, 100+ yards, 2 touchdowns is incredible. And then, you saw kind of what that development became, where teams are rolling guys in his direction and coverage. And we're going to see more of that, I anticipate, this year. And Mike Zimmer said earlier in training camp that when we talk about, will there be a sophomore slump? Do you concern yourself with a dip in production? The numbers very well could look different. Like he could, you know, potentially have less than 1400 receiving yards. So what? Because there are other skill guys like an Adam Thielen and Irv Smith in this offense, where if you are dedicating as a defense all this added attention to Justin Jefferson or bracket coverage, if you're really going to play two guys on him and man, whatever, that's going to open up opportunities for other players. And, you know, Zimmer kind of cautioned Justin Jefferson in a way, like, don't get discouraged with that because you're helping the team if you're taking away that attention. And, you know, he very well could have 1400 receiving yards or more. I mean, I've sat down with him, we've talked about it, and he feels like his confidence, given everything he went through during the most bizarre circumstances anybody has dealt with during a rookie season, to come out on top that way, you kind of got to go into it and be like, if I can deal with that and still produce, I can deal with anything. So that's at least what I take with someone like Justin Jefferson about where his mindset is this year. I mean, yes, he's dealing with the shoulder injury, but he just came back to practice on the 16th of August. We saw him in really, really limited capacity. This is somebody who doesn't need the preseason. So I personally would put him on ice and wait till the first week. But he's going to be a big part of this. They build a lot around Dalvin Cook, but they also in the passing game build a lot around Justin Jefferson. And I think that that's going to be a critical part of what can keep this team trending in the right direction in 21.
Does Dalvin still look the same?
Yeah.
Cause I think a lot of people are waiting for the wheel, you know, with running backs, you're always waiting, like, especially when they're big volume guys, and he's a big volume guy, him, Derrick Henry, those guys that just, they are the focal points of the offense. Do you expect him to have the same kind of volume? Are they starting to maybe show some interest in lessening his load or in any way?
The smart thing to do is lessen the load, right? Because that curse of 370, which is a football outsider's principle, which has been studied and is, you know, factually proven, when guys have 370 touches on their body, the next year, unless you're Adrian Peterson, because the guy's a freak of nature, like, you know, a lot of times there's a dip in production the next year. Dalvin had 356 touches on his body last year. He missed the last game of the season because his father passed away, but, and he missed, you know, the Atlanta game, and he was out for the second half of Seattle. Like, he would have reached that had he played a full 16 game schedule. Now he's got 17 games. So I think you look at this and say, I'm just speaking from a fantasy perspective, wow, 2000 yards might actually be possible for Dalvin Cook if he can play a full 17 game slate. He's never played a full slate in his career in the NFL, which is good and bad. I don't think you necessarily have to, but it should, you know, the volume from last year, I think, should be something not to be concerned with, but to be cautious about, because you ride this player for a lot on offense, and it should concern you just trying to replicate that again and again, because we know running backs have a lot of wear and tear. It's why some people don't think the value's there in terms of what you pay them. They paid Dalvin Cook quite a bit last year, and he earned it. There's no denying that, but I like what they have in this running back room. Alexander Mattison is not like a carbon copy of Dalvin Cook, but he's pretty close, and he can get you, you know, he's somebody, if you're going to be spelling Dalvin Cook, you're looking at Alexander Mattison to not have that much drop off. That's why they have him. Kane Wongwu, the fourth round pick that they got out of Iowa State, who really didn't have like the running back reps with the Cyclones. Like, I mean, he's gotten a chance now to see, okay, this is what it's like to play running back and not just be like an awesome kickoff returner. So I think he's going to have a really big role. Maybe is that change of pace guy. He is fast, like so fast. I noticed that during OTAs, and you know, you talk about these guys with like 4.3 40s, and actually seeing it in action and what it looks like when someone explodes out of the backfield like that is really impressive. So they have all the pieces in place, you'd think, to be able to not have to ride Dalvin Cook as hard as they have in previous seasons. But this is a team, Mike Zimmer said it, when the game is on the line, when it's critical situations, they want their number one back to have the ball. That's the long and the short of it. And I can't disagree with that. So I think you will still see Dalvin Cook getting his this year. It's not like they're going to be like, okay, 356 touches, need to pull back the reins on him, because he wants to go. And it's just a matter of, you know, how far this offense will go is based on how far Dalvin Cook will get you. So you got to preserve it when you can.
Where do we stand on vaccinations there?
You know, it's a situation that if you're not vaccinated by now, I talked with somebody about this recently with the team that, you know, the guys who are not vaccinated, obviously Kirk is one of them. And he's gotten a lot of the, you know, the headlines for what he said during his press conference, but he's not the only one. Like there are fans who get frustrated with like, well, why aren't you guys asking Dalvin Cook, who is also not vaccinated, and Adam Thielen, who's not vaccinated, Harrison Smith, well, why aren't you asking them about their decision? Well, we didn't see the safety, anybody in the defensive back room get taken out by a COVID situation like we did with the quarterbacks. For Kellen Mond was out for 10 days. Kirk Cousins, Nate Stanley were close contacts. They were down to one quarterback there for a hot second. Luckily it happened during training camp, but you know, there are a lot of starters on this team who, as it stands right now, are not vaccinated. And I don't know if you're not, if you haven't gotten at this point, I don't know if you will, before the regular season starts. So that makes, when we talk about how far this team can go, what the expectations are, that's a wrinkle that you cannot look over, because it's not like, oh, this happened during the preseason, it won't happen again. This could very well happen again in the regular season. And if it does, then it becomes an issue and it becomes something that, you know, overshadows whatever else we're talking about, because we're potentially talking about guys missing games and game checks and, you know, being depleted, you know, position.
Potentially position. Forfeiting.
Yeah. And that's a really tough pill, I think, for guys to swallow. Whereas it's not an issue right now in terms of what's going on inside the locker room. You talk to guys and they'll be like, look, we respect everybody's opinion. We respect everybody's decision. There have been several players. Patrick Peterson's been outspoken about why he got the vaccine. Eric Kendricks, somebody as well. That's all great right now. But if they're in a situation where, you know, some of your starters are having to miss games, or a situation, if you're a close contact, you're not vaccinated, and somebody else gets COVID and you're around them, and you have to sit out. That's somewhere I think the leadership of the group can be tested. And frankly, they obviously hope they don't have to get there, but let's deal with reality. This variant's very contagious, and it's kind of scary, the situation right now outside of our NFL bubble. Like I think we forget, like, this is happening everywhere. It's not just inside these walls at TCO Performance Center. So you can be as cautious as you want with it, but you know, teams who have the higher vaccination rate, I think will be more successful this year, because you're not as worried about what could happen as far as like guys not being available for games. But as Mike Zimmer said back in June, it's going to be more difficult on the unvaccinated players this year. You can't travel with the team. You can't leave during the bye week. You have to get tested every single day. It really could affect the camaraderie, not just of the Vikings, but really any team that has a low vaccination rate. And as we know from the Washington Post report back at the beginning of August, they had the lowest vaccination rate. Now, I don't know if that's changed in the time that 2 weeks have passed, but that was kind of alarming when we saw that. And you wonder, okay, has any of the situation the quarterback room went through, has that caused anybody to change their mind that may be unvaccinated on this team?
So that's one way that, you know, the pendulum could swing potentially, unforeseen things that are related to forfeits, losing players for vaccination, whatever. If what is the other thing that you think is the primary question mark for you, like the X factor that could push this team towards being a successful team? Because I think most people see them as like, and Vegas sees them as a middle of the road, they're going to be one of the average teams in the NFL. What pushes them towards success, and what pushes them towards a lack of success? What's the thing?
You need the defense to revert back to form. And you are hedging it based on, you know, players who, you know, Xavier Woods, for example, you know, he's a safety from the Dallas Cowboys, and you know, they didn't have a great defense last year. He didn't have his best year last year, but you brought him in here on a one-year deal. Same with Mackenzie Alexander, Patrick Peterson. You know, there's been a lot of acquisitions on the defensive side of the ball. Will it actually come to fruition? I mean, obviously getting Danielle Hunter back was a huge priority for them. They couldn't afford to not have him this year and then be relying on what your defensive end situation would look like then. Would be a Stephen Weatherly and a DJ Wanham, a second year player, to, you know, help establish your pass rush. Like you needed Hunter back. So they got him back. Now, will all these pieces actually fit together? If the defense can be the focal point of the Vikings once again. Not saying it has to be 2017. I don't know if this group will be the 2017 Minnesota Vikings that were number one in defense for a number of weeks and help this team get to the NFC Championship. But they need to be a lot better than they, I mean, that's just the baseline. If be better than you were in 2020 and then some, because if the defense can't hold its weight, you're putting so much stress on the offense to carry it. And frankly, that's why you saw so many close games last year. Like, I still think back to that game where Russell Wilson had under 2 minutes and timeouts that they didn't use, in Seattle. And no timeouts in Seattle. And he still went down and scored. And that was a really close loss on the road. That was a really tough pill for them to swallow. And part of the reason they started out 1-5. So you have to be better than you were defensively, because everything else is based on the success of the defense here in Minnesota.
Courtney, I really appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
All right, I think I'm still feeling optimistic, though admittedly I'm also still unsure about what that means in terms of placement in the larger league picture. I said earlier of the Ravens, I could see them finishing first in their division. I could see them finishing third. I think that the same holds true for the Vikings. But speaking of the Ravens, let's get to them. A team that's made the playoffs for 3 straight years. They were in the mix for best team in the league in 2019. Took a little bit of a step back in 2020, just not as dominant as they were the year before. Though they still won a lot of games. 11-5 is good, right? My question is, will they be that again? A team we expect to make the postseason, but probably not the Super Bowl? Or are they better than that now? Or maybe, are they not as good? Jameson Hensley has covered the team for 2 decades now, currently covers them for ESPN, and he joins us now. Hi, Jameson. Big fan of your work. Really appreciate you taking the time to break this team down for me.
Oh, happy to be here. I'm pleasure to talking to you.
Do you feel like you have a handle on how good this team is going to be this year?
A little bit. There are some question marks. They're dealing with a lot of injuries, not anything significant at this point. But the offensive line, which the Ravens rebuilt, and their big priority was they have to protect Lamar Jackson. They have to get him more time in the pocket. And on paper, this is going to be a better offensive line. But this is their 4th week of training camp, and they've not had 1 practice with all 5 projected starters working together. And offense coordinator Greg Roman said today, you look at the calendar, now is the time you need to have this continuity start. They're hoping by the end of this week or early next week, they will have all 5 of those starters in there. But until we see them out on the field, we really don't know how well this offensive line is going to do. And if you kind of look at Lamar Jackson, back in 2019, his MVP season, they had one of the best offensive lines in football. Last year, when they were kind of more up and down and uneven, the offensive line also was up and down and uneven. So how the offensive line goes this year, I think, will determine how well Lamar Jackson performs and how well this Ravens team performs overall.
So when we talk about the deficiencies in the passing game, right, and that's a conversation surrounding Lamar Jackson has since he entered the league, frankly, is like, can he get it done in that facet of quarterbacking? We all know how good the run game is. We all know how good he is in that area. The deficiencies in the passing game that we saw last year and to a degree the year before, do you think that those are more closely linked to him, the wide receivers, or like you said, the offensive line, or is it some combination of the three?
It is really a combination. And I think that's kind of where there just was it felt like a disconnect last year, because it was always kind of something was off. Even when the pass protection was good, the wide receivers were open, Lamar Jackson didn't throw a good ball. Or Lamar Jackson was throwing a good ball, but the wide receivers were dropping it because they had like the 3rd or 4th most drops last year. They never seemed to be in sync. And I did think it was very telling when the Ravens signed Sammy Watkins in free agency, and he was asked, how does this passing game, which ranked last in the NFL, how does this get better? How do you get Lamar Jackson better? And he said, when he watched film, the wide receivers didn't get open enough. So he kind of put it on the wide receivers. They have to do their job better. And with the Ravens, I'll give them a lot of credit because not only did they sign Sammy Watkins in free agency, they used another first round pick on Rashad Bateman, another, you know, on a wide receiver in the first round. They also revamped the coaching staff a little bit. They added T. Martin, a wide receiver coach, as well as Keith Williams, who is his title is pass game specialist, but he has been a personal wide receivers tutor to Tyreek Hill, Devontae Adams out in Green Bay. So he has a special gift when it comes to wide receivers, and they have been coaching the heck out of these wide receivers. So I think if they can get everybody to improve just a little bit and kind of get in sync, this passing game will get better. They're not expecting this to be a top 10 or even a top 15 passing game. They're hoping efficiency wise, they'll be much more improved.
What would it look like what do you think that is their best case scenario in terms of who the various weapons are, who fits in where, who's the one, what does Rashad Bateman look like? I feel like there are a lot of pieces that we're familiar with, but I don't exactly know how they'll all fit together.
Yeah. And I think Bateman, and you know, I've seen a lot of first round wide receivers come through with the Ravens, and when they first get there, that you could tell they're just not up to speed. I thought Bateman was the most polished prospect they've ever had at wide receiver as a rookie, but he just had groin surgery last week. Probably not going to be there for the season opener. Might not be there until maybe week 3 or week 4. So again, you're not going to get what you would hope in to be an immediate impact out of him. I thought Sammy Watkins has been really the most consistent wide receiver they've had, but now he's dealing with a little minor injury as well. I think what they just need to have the wide receivers create some kind of deep threat, because with this running game, they know teams are going to be packing it in and really stopping. What they want is that, you know, they don't have to have Lamar Jackson be, as far as passing yards, be a 3,000 yard pass. What they need to have is a lot more deep shots. And we saw that from the very first practice to even now, they're trying to stretch the field. But of course, also when we're talking about wide receivers, but what it really comes down to, that still the top target for Lamar Jackson will be tight end Mark Andrews. It's a contract year for him. I expect another big year for him, but they just can't rely on Mark Andrews. They have to have something on the outside. And again, the big shots, the deep shots downfield, if they can get that, I think they'll be happy.
Was that the biggest problem against the Bills? Because it felt like at the end of the year, and this is the problem with every team that's one-dimensional, even one that is so strong in that one dimension, as the Ravens have been in the run game, is that when you face a good defense, they can find ways to stop that. And then if you're not having your very best day, then you're just dead in the water. What was the primary takeaway from that game against the Bills in terms of, you know, the thing that they absolutely had to have this year in order to make them a Super Bowl contender, that thing that's been missing?
Yeah. And again, I don't want to when they get behind, and it's not very often they get behind, it's when they get behind and defenses can tee off and just say, because when you have Lamar Jackson, pass rushers hate going against Lamar Jackson, especially when it's the Ravens have a lead or it's very close, because he's such a threat to take off. Pass rushers just can't go full throttle. They almost have to be reactionary. And I think that really helps out the offensive line a lot. But when the Ravens get behind and pass rushers know Lamar Jackson's not going to do a read option pass when they're down by 2 or 3 scores, that's when the defense can really tee off. And that against the Bills, that was the big problem. And I know people keep talking about, oh, well, Lamar Jackson's durability when he runs. Well, he got knocked out of that Bills game because he was dropping back to pass and he got hit so hard, his head went back and he got a concussion. And I think when he needs to have time to throw the ball when they're trailing. And that's why they went out. They got Kevin Zeitler in free agency to a really good deal to be their right guard. They really didn't address losing Marshall Yanda, their perennial Pro Bowler at right guard. They moved Bradley Bozeman from left guard to center. They added rookie third round pick Van Cleveland to be their left guard. The only suspect move was trading Orlando Brown Jr., a Pro Bowl right tackle, to the Kansas City Chiefs because he wanted to play left tackle. They did bring in Alejandro Villanueva, the Steelers left tackle, to be over there on right tackle. But still, they're hoping collectively that group will give Lamar Jackson more time to throw, because I think that's the biggest thing. They feel like if Lamar Jackson has time to go through his progressions and he has such a good vision on the field, not that he knows exactly what, as far as fast progressions, he just has a good way of visualizing where the good spots to throw the ball, but he needs time to do that. And against Buffalo, he did not have that.
Who do you think they see as the X factor at wide receiver this year?
It really is Marquise Brown, Hollywood Brown. And he was a first round pick from a couple of years ago. And the big problem with that is he's clearly the fastest receiver they have on the team. But when they drafted him in 2019, he had all season foot surgery, really couldn't participate in spring workouts. Then last year, because of the pandemic, Brown didn't have hardly much time to really work with Lamar on the practice field. And then this year, they were thinking, oh, he had a full spring, but second day of training camp, he injures his hamstring. He hasn't had a full practice since July 29th. If he can come back, and again, the reason they drafted him, a lot of people said, oh, they were looking for him to be a number one wide receiver. Possibly, but they wanted him to be able to just go straight down the field. They don't feel any corner can stay with him as far as his straight line speed. It really is going to be up to Lamar Jackson when he sees Marquise Hollywood Brown open to deliver the ball. You saw that first game together in 2019 against Miami, where it seemed like he just kept throwing the ball up to Brown and everyone had this high expectations. They really haven't connected consistently since that game. They need more of that. And I think that's why Brown is really the X factor for the Ravens.
Do you feel like, we heard Dan Orlovsky earlier this week nationally, Rashad Bateman kind of fired back at him, expressed some concerns about the wide receiver core, saying this was the weakness that they had last year. And it is still looking kind of like a weakness. And part of that is related to the fact that we've seen some injuries in training camp and we're not really able to see what they look like. I'm a little bit concerned about the fact that some of the injuries that we're seeing in training camp are soft tissue injuries. We're seeing hamstrings, we're seeing groins. Those are the types of injuries that continue to plague people sometimes throughout the season. We don't know if that will be the case, but it's not exactly calm inducing for me if I'm a Ravens fan. What is your gut feeling about like where the wide receiver group stands? Will it be better this year, or do you think that's a legitimate concern still?
I think it's a concern, and I think it's going to take some time. I think this wide receiver core will be better than they've had with Lamar Jackson, but you might not see the best of them until maybe midseason. And the reason I say that is because they just haven't really had any practice time together, because when all the wide receivers were healthy at the start of training camp, Lamar Jackson tested positive for COVID. He had a quarantine for 10 days. Jackson comes back and you have Bateman having a groin injury, which he's had surgery. Marquise Brown has a hamstring injury. And then Sammy Watkins is dealing now with another injury. So until everybody gets back together, and we heard Lamar during this offseason say, look how much he was looking forward to training camp, because he's like, that's the time where you build the chemistry with your wide receivers. And they just haven't had that. So I think it's going to take time, because so much of this, when you're throwing to the outside, it is dealing with timing, and you need to know where to put the ball, where they like to have it thrown to them. And with Lamar Jackson, they just really haven't had that time. So I think talent wise, they're much better than in years past, but it might take them too. Late October, early November, before they build that chemistry with that group.
Do they have that time when you look at their schedule and the way that things lay out?
Yeah, it's going to be tough, because when you start the season with the Las Vegas Raiders, and you know in that stadium they're going to have fans for the first time in that stadium, that's a tough situation.
All vaccinated, no masks.
Exactly. You know. Yes. And then after having a Monday night game in Las Vegas, the Ravens have to travel all the way back on a short week. They're not going to get back to Baltimore until like Tuesday at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. And then they have a short week to prepare against the Kansas City Chiefs team that Lamar Jackson has even acknowledged that's their kryptonite. You can't start off, if they start off with that 0-2 hole, that's tough. So yeah, they would rather have these guys together because they know it's going to be a tough, real start for them. But I think overall, they still have enough time to kind of get, find their way. And I think if we learned anything from last year, the Ravens, again, they struggled September, October, even a little bit of November. But when Lamar Jackson came back from after testing positive for COVID after Thanksgiving, they had to win. They were in must-win mode for those last six games, and they were able to do that. So the Ravens kind of know, with Lamar Jackson, if they have or put in a situation where they need to win out, they showed last year they can do it. They just don't want to have to be put in that situation, but they know they have to. They can do it if they have to.
Is the defense going to be strong enough to carry them again this year if they needed to?
I really do, and they hear that, oh, the Pittsburgh Steelers, you know, they're you know, top ranked defense, and the Cleveland Browns, look at all the talent, the first round picks that they have on that defense. And the Ravens defense haven't said that much this year, but you can kind of get this. They're like, wait a second, we're a pretty good defense in our own right. And I thought really the only question mark I had for this defense was the pass rush. And you lose Matthew Judon, you lose Yannick Ngakoue in free agency, and they didn't sign anybody early on. They went more offensive line, wide receiver in free agency. But then in the draft, they went with Odafe Oweh, and people go, wait a second, is that the pass rusher who didn't have a sack in his final year in college? Yeah, but, and I was skeptical too, but you watched him in training camp. He is one of the fastest players on the field, and he's built like an NBA power forward. And I think he is going to be very disruptive on the field. And then just to kind of solidify things, they brought in Justin Houston, and Ravens defense coordinator Don Wink Martindale was asked, well, how does he fit into this defense? And he's like, well, Houston, 97 and a half career sacks. I think we'll find a way to fit him in on this defense. So I think they went, you know, older, younger to fill up kind of that gap there. And I think they're going to be very good. And then we always know the Ravens love to blitz. So even if they're not generating a pass rush with their front four, they're going to be able to generate it with their blitz. And I think they have a really good secondary, possibly the most talented secondary, especially at cornerback in the NFL. And then you have in the middle of the defense, Patrick Queen, who was, again, very inconsistent last year. I think he kind of really impressed the coaches with his splash plays last year. If he can show more consistency, and you saw in that preseason opener, he was flying over the field. I mean, it was very Ray Lewis-like. If they can find some consistency with Patrick Queen in that middle of that defense, I think this is, a top five defense.
In terms of expectations there in Baltimore, within the building, outside the building, what's the ceiling and what's the floor? What's a success and what's a failure?
Yeah, and I think, you know, obviously, I think the ceiling is Super Bowl, and I think they really feel like they can very much duplicate that 2019 season when they went 14-2 and they were the top seed in the AFC. The floor, I don't see them ever really having a losing record with Lamar because, he's 30-7. The only team he consistently loses to is the Kansas City Chiefs. I do feel that they could get into a situation where they're 11 or 12 win team. I just think this is too good overall with Lamar and this defense. And then you also have Justin Tucker who can win the close games if there are in that situation. I still think this is a playoff team, whether it's division winner or wild card. I just think with Lamar Jackson, three seasons, three playoff appearances, I don't think that trend is going to be changing right now.
Do you think Lamar feels like he has something to prove this year? And I know it's relative, right? I mean, but coming off of the MVP season, he kind of dipped out of that conversation last year. He was not really a part of it. We all know that he's one of the better quarterbacks in the league, but particularly because of the passing deficiencies, I think that there are pretty big question marks attached to him and whether he can get it done in that department.
Yeah, he does. And he knows it. And you know, this is a big year for him because it's a year where I think if in his mind that if he puts up another MVP-like performance, then he can get a contract that might even rival a Patrick Mahomes. And everyone right now is saying, oh, he'll get around with Josh Allen. But I think in his mind that, you know, if he comes out and puts out a spectacular season, he has evidence to say, hey, look, you should pay me closer to a Patrick Mahomes. And he has heard all about, oh, you know, passing, he had to be, you know, better, you know, in the pocket and things like that. And I really feel last year, that first part of the season, one of the reasons why we didn't see the 2019 Ravens was because they were trying to say to critics, hey, look, Lamar Jackson, we're going to have him throw the ball. Once they went back to the running game, it was like the old Ravens again. And I think they have to kind of balance that out a little bit. They want to kind of give Lamar Jackson the stage to say, hey, you can be a passer. But they also know they can't get away from what they are best at, and that is running the ball. But he has heard this, and he's heard how, you know, Pro Football Focus didn't even have him rated among the top 50 players in the NFL. He knows there are a lot of people that wonder whether still, you know, he can be a consistent passing quarterback in this league. And what we've seen now of Lamar, you know, he kind of likes hearing that sometimes because that motivates him in some ways. So we'll see what it does this year. But, you know, you hear all the questions with him on, he's even now talking about vaccinations and things like that. And, you know, why is he playing with kids during a contract year on asphalt? He hears all of it. He knows he is one of the most scrutinized athletes out there. And to his credit, takes it all in stride, has never really been defensive with us when we've been asking the questions. But I do think it does serve as a motivating factor.
You bring up a really interesting point about continuing to win by focusing on your strength and not wanting to get away from that. What do you think the sweet spot is for them in terms of run pass ratio?
Yeah, I know they want, the evolution of Lamar Jackson is every year they want to throw more and run less. But I still feel this will be very similar to what they've done in the past. I still think that this offensive line is a built for just, I mean, they have maulers along that offensive line. And I think they are best going forward, pushing guys around. And then when you sign Gus Edwards to an extension, you have J.K. Dobbins, who I think is primed for a breakthrough season. I still think they are going to be a run heavy team. And again, I don't, they might not have as many rushing attempts as the previous 2 years, but I think it is a very safe bet to say the Ravens are still going to lead the NFL in rushing attempts. Might not be as much as the previous two seasons, but they are still going to be run.
Jameson, you're great at your job. Really appreciate you making time for us. I'm very interested to see how this all goes.
Yeah, I am as well. Once these guys get back from injuries, I think we'll get a better perspective of where this team's going.
Great follow on Twitter at Jameson Hensley. And thanks again to Courtney Cronin from earlier in the program, who set us straight on all things Vikings. And we will be back next week with a closer look at the Patriots and the Panthers. How you feeling about those two teams? Let me know on Twitter at Lindsay_Rhodes. I'm also on Instagram at Lindsay Rhodes NFL. Do I need to say the at? I feel like, anyway, am I like the old person who still says at? Nobody says at. Anyway, if you enjoyed this episode and you want to hear more, please give us a 5-star rating and leave a review. That helps us out a lot. It helps other people find the program. Also, subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Pandora, wherever you get your podcasts. The NFL Roadshow is also available on the SXM app. Free for most subscribers. Just download it today and tap podcasts. The NFL Roadshow is part of the SiriusXM Podcast Network. The executive producer is Andrew Emmer. Andy King is the director of sports podcasting for SiriusXM. And a special thanks goes out to SiriusXM's senior vice president of sports programming and podcasting, Steve Cohen. And we'll see you next week.
SiriusXM Podcasts.